As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I am Ben Standing and I cover the Washington football team for The Athletic, coming to you guys on a Sunday night. Last week was a bonus week for the Washington football team. Consider this maybe then a bonus episode. It's still the holiday weekend. I hope everyone is having a good one out there. I struggle to believe that it is September. I mean, I understand it. I can read a calendar. It's actually been a little fall-like weather the last few days. Mentally, though, I'm still deep into the summer and not... I do this every year. Labor Day weekend is always brutal. It is a reminder of what's about to come. I don't mean the positives of, say, football season or sports. I just mean winter is looming, and I prefer the sunny days. But in any event, here's what we've got on the episode today. Since I'm going to make, like I said, turning this into sort of a bonus episode, I'll have a Chargers preview and a full-blown Washington football team preview later in the week. I just thought I would have a little fun here. And looking at the Washington roster, I always like this exercise. We talk typically about who are the best players, who are the most valuable players. What about the most indispensable players? What do I mean by that? I'll get to that in a second. But basically, you know, like look at the depth chart. Like if somebody goes down, you know, it's a combination of talent, value, and if somebody, you know, if something happens, how much does that dramatically change Washington's world? I'm sure a couple names come to mind, but I think there may be some subtle differences that could shape one's top 10 list. I'll give you mine in just a few minutes. In addition to that, a couple weeks ago, I talked to our friend Jay Michael to talk about the Wizards. At that moment, Jay Michael was still the Indiana Pacers beat reporter for the Indianapolis Star. He has subsequently left the Pacers beat to go become the sports editor for the Orlando Sentinel, which is a great opportunity for him, and I'm excited for Jay Michael. But he's obviously not only covered the Wizards in the past, he covered the Pacers, a team with Aaron Holiday, and he obviously was well aware of the Eastern Conference race. So we discussed sort of where the Wizards are this offseason. I don't think anything has really changed on the Wizards front since we spoke. So got into everything that's been kind of going on with them this offseason, so I will finally get that up for everybody here. And of course, you can go read me over on The Athletic. If you still haven't subscribed, it's a great time to do so. We still have this 50% off subscription deal going up for a few more days. Don't quote me on exactly when, but I think maybe through the week, or at least, you know, with the season starting, you know, it's a great way to get in. What else can I say? Obviously, it helps pay the bills. We always appreciate that. And of course, for this podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. Always appreciate that. If you missed any of the recent podcasts, Greg Cosell gave us the X's and O's look at Washington. If you still haven't done your fantasy football draft, you can do that with John Hansen. My conversation with John Hansen, fantasy guru, host of the SiriusXM Fantasy Morning Radio Show. Plus, I've had on Matt Parrish, Adam Kaplan, a bunch of others. So you can check out all those episodes on the podcast. All right, before we get into the indispensable list, just a couple quick notes if you've been sort of out and about not paying attention. So Peyton Barber, no longer with the team. He has signed with the Raiders, and I reported that the other day. The Raiders plucked him off of Washington's practice squad to go to their 53. I'm not sure how closely Washington considered moving Peyton Barber onto the 53 after they released him. They could have, you know, in theory, prevented him from going to the Raiders, but obviously they just made the decision to not put him on the 53, so it would be hard to imagine that there was much consideration at that point, but you never know for sure. They at this moment have not replaced him. There's still one opening on the practice squad. The obvious answer is to bring back Jonathan Williams, who was the other running back in camp up until the end. He was released the other day when the roster was dropped to 53. But we'll see what happens. I would imagine something happens by Monday, which is when Washington returns to practice. They're going to practice Monday this week, then day off, then Wednesday, Thursday, and then off Friday, Saturday, essentially. I mean, off at least in terms of the media. They may be doing some light work in-house, but no media day on those days. And then obviously the game Sunday at FedEx Field against Justin Herbert and the Los Angeles Chargers. Again, the plan is to have a preview with our with the Athletics Chargers beat writer Daniel Popper later this week. Speaking of the practice squad, a very interesting move by Washington the other day, that they signed kicker Eddie Pinheiro to the practice squad. We have been asking all along, or wondering all throughout the summer, would they bring in competition for Dustin Hopkins? It feels like the answer is finally yes. It seemed to make sense. I remember discussing this at some point. I don't know if I think it was on this podcast, but at least with at least in the outside world, sort of the idea of if you were going to bring in competition for Hopkins, it would probably be after teams made their cuts, because most of the interesting kickers out there are on somebody's team right now, even if it's just like, you know, as a number two kicker in camp or whatever it may be. Pinheiro kicked for the Bears in 2019, and we'll see. It'll be interesting to hear from Ron Rivera why they decided to do that. Whether it's a warning for Dustin Hopkins, just in case. I don't know if there was some sort of an injury, or look, Hopkins has been obviously, you know, had a little bit of a shaky preseason. I think he was 4-for-7 overall, but, you know, he struggled from distance. Pinheiro has a clear leg. If you've seen any of his videos on Twitter, he's got some leg. Just there's also a reason why he hasn't been in the league. So we'll see how that he hasn't been in the league since 2019. I believe he was with the Colts in camp, I want to say. But in any event, that is something interesting to keep an eye on for sure. And then lastly, as I mentioned, practice on Monday. Ron Rivera told us the other day that he expects to see Curtis Samuel out there Monday. We have yet to see Curtis Samuel this entire time. No signs of Curtis Samuel. Sounds like he'll be back. What that means for the game against the Chargers, we'll have to see. Rivera basically said he's either all in or he's not going to play. So it's not like he's sort of in, they can maybe use him for 10 plays, limited package. No, he said if he can go, he can go. If he can't, they'll move on, and he feels like they have comfortable with their other options. Obviously, we've seen an entire summer with Terry McLaurin and Cam Sims and De'Ami Brown and Adam Humphries. And obviously, you know, they also kept Dax Milne and DeAndre Carter. So they definitely have receivers, but, you know, obviously they signed Curtis Samuel for a reason. He's a big-time playmaker, and we'll have to see what he can do. So obviously, I think that's going to be the big story on Monday, beyond possibly what's going on with the kicker situation. So we'll talk more about those things as the week progresses. All right, let's get to the indispensable list. I like my lists, and this one is always a fun one for me, because I think typically, you know, it's sort of easy to say, well, best, you know, I mean, you can imagine who the best players are on any given team, or if you want to say the most valuable in certain ways. I just think indispensable adds a new element, because it's not just about the individual player. It's about what happens if something happens essentially to that player. It's, you know, the, the wins above replacement kind of stat. And there may be some numbers out there that tell us some of these things. I'm not doing any of that. I'm just looking at a list and coming up with names how I see fit. But I do think this is, this has nothing to do with will they go to the Super Bowl per se, or will they win the NFC East, or will they flounder. It just has to do with, as I look at the roster, who are the guys that I think are, I guess, to some degree going to make and break this team, you know, in that if they have a great season, then Washington should have some good fortune. If they don't, if they struggle, then, you know, we'll have to see what happens. Let's just jump in to it. I'll go 10 to 1. Does that work? All right. 10 to 1. We'll start with number 10. I went with Brandon Scherff. Again, if we were just talking best players, he would probably be, you know, top 5, I guess, something like that. And I'm not going with 10 is definitely not an intended dig or anything by like that. And, you know, obviously it's still pretty good. But obviously Brandon Scherff's been hurt a bunch in the last few years, and they've been able to sort of plug away. They do have some guard depth, we think. Eric Flowers, it looks like, is going to start at left guard, with Wes Schweitzer able to fill in either left or right guard. There's also Sadiq Charles, who started one game last year, only obviously played, you know, barely played in the game before suffering a season-ending injury, but he exists as well. So, you know, I guess my thinking is that, look, Brandon Scherff is one of the best players on the team. They may have some decent enough options, and since he has continually been hurt, it's not like we haven't seen them have to deal with this before. So, to me, I think Brandon Scherff makes the list, but I went with number 10. For what it's worth, I do feel that, you know, for all the talk we've had about quarterbacks this year, about the playmakers, Curtis Samuel, Antonio Gibson's toe, things along these lines, that the offensive line, I think it's a big question to a degree. Not when I say a big question, I don't necessarily mean that means it will be bad or struggle. I just mean it's a question, right? I mean, we talked a lot at the start of training camp about Sam Cosmi, and he was obviously, you know, just taking some usual adjustments at the start of camp, especially going against Chase Young and Montez Sweat. He picked up his play as camp progressed, and we haven't even talked about him as much of late. He is still a rookie right tackle, and he's going to face Joey Bosa at some point in the first game, and it'll go from there. And rookies on the offensive line at that position can have a tough go of it, and, you know, we'll see what happens. And plus, you have Charles Leno on the left side. And look, I mean, Leno has been a solid tackle in his career, but, you know, I mean, you know, it's sort of how I view Morgan Moses when he was here for most years. I expect solid work, but it's not like that we haven't seen some downside. The Bears moved on from him for a reason. I don't think everybody around the league sees Leno as like some screaming upgrade necessarily, but at the same point, he's obviously been a good player in his career. So, you know, new tackles on both ends. We'll see how that goes, but I at least wanted to mention the offensive line here. So Brandon Scherff in at number 10. Number 9, I went with Daron Payne. Obviously, defensive tackle is where this team has more depth than any position in on the roster. When you have Daron Payne, John Allen with Matt Ioannidis and Tim Settle, you know, obviously there's a hierarchy there, but you could feels like you could go with any of the four and play them and feel pretty decent about where you're at. So the reason why Daron Payne gets in here is just the talent. He's their top run stuffer. I mentioned in my conversation with Greg Cosell the other day when I asked him who's the guy on this team that he just likes watching play, and he said Daron Payne really stood out to him. And I'd mentioned that the previous year, Jack Del Rio said the guy he liked watching on tape the most was also Daron Payne. So from just a pure talent perspective, with what he can do specifically stopping the run, just thought it was worth getting him in there. So Daron Payne comes in at number 9. Number 8, I'm going with William Jackson. Obviously, Washington signed the cornerback in free agency. It was one of the two guys they gave a big multi-year contract to, the other being Curtis Samuel. Whereas Samuel hasn't played at all in this summer, Jackson's been in and out a bit. And it's hard to say exactly what to make of his summer, right? I mean, early in camp, he was facing Terry McLaurin a lot in these one-on-one drills, and these things are completely geared towards helping or towards favoring the receivers. That worked out that way. McLaurin got the better of him often, and, you know, there was a reason, I think, why we have all sort of talked about the idea of Jackson, who played mostly in man concepts in Cincinnati, a little more zone look here with Washington. What does that mean? It doesn't necessarily mean squat, you know, corner, they're zone man concepts all the time, depending on the player, the circumstance, what have you. You know, I'm not too worried about it with Jackson, but at the same point, you know, it's something to keep an eye on. It is some sort of an adjustment for him. The reason why, though, I said him, look, they have three interesting cornerbacks, right? You've got Jackson, You've got Kendall Fuller, who looks like he'll be playing a bit in the slot this year, and Benjamin St. Juste. But, you know, whereas before Jimmy Moreland was the other corner, and you were just in our heads, we're like, okay, well, that's a solid option. I'm not saying these other guys are not, but now we're looking at Torrey McTyre, Daryl Roberts, and Troy Apke. McTyre had a really good summer. That's why he made this team. And Daryl Roberts impressed the coaching staff late in the process, and Troy Apke's here mostly for special teams. But, if something were to happen to one of those corners, or really any of them, I went with Jackson because I guess he is considered to be the best of the three. If something were to happen, now all of a sudden the guy, one of these other ones is going to be on the field a lot, and that's already with St. Juste playing a bunch. And I think St. Juste has looked good so far, but again, he's a rookie. With that, it's typically going to come some ups and downs. So the fact that you're already relying on a rookie, and then if Jackson or Fuller were to miss time, now we're looking at guys who a lot of us didn't even project to be on the team, either at the start or the end of training camp. So that's why I went with Jackson, on top of the fact that obviously they signed him for a reason, to be I can't stand the term shutdown corner, but to be a guy who can defend against some of the better receivers in the league whenever he is in there. So William Jackson for me at number 8. How about this? Let's get to the 1 through 7 of the most indispensable Washington football team players right after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, let's get back to this. Number 7, this is lower than perhaps he should be. Certainly lower if we were just talking about best player. I went with Terry McLaurin here. Now, obviously, a heck of a player, right? I mean, been praising him for 3 years now. Heck of a player, and he's their best receiver by a lot. But the reason I went with him 7, if that feels a little low, for a couple of reasons. One, it's not like they have an easy replacement for him. He's the most complete receiver they have. Curtis Samuel, he's more of a, I'm not saying he's a gadget, but he's more of a gadget type receiver than he is like a full-blown wide receiver. Adam Humphries is kind of limited to the slot. Cam Sims, big target, but it's not like a guy you're going to, throw all your routes to. Deami Brown is probably the most complete receiver that I would say, but beyond McLaurin, but he's obviously only a rookie. So it's not like you would have an easy replacement for McLaurin. However, they do have a bunch of other guys I just mentioned. They also have Logan Thomas. They also have Antonio Gibson and J.D. McKissick. So it's not like they wouldn't have receiving options. So I went with McLaurin there at 7. Again, if we're talking best, he's probably somewhere in the top 5. But for indispensable, I feel like Washington could get by a little bit. You absolutely throw this back in my face if he misses time, knock on wood, and the passing attack falls apart. But I went there with McLaurin. Number 6, how about Cam Curl? I mean, we have talked about this big nickel, this Buffalo nickel position for a year and change now, and it feels like it's Cam Curl in that role when we talk about it all the time. And I know Ron Rivera has said that there's other guys that could play it, but it doesn't feel like, at the moment at least, that there's anybody else in the team that has Cam Curl's combination of passability, the willingness to stick his nose in around the line of scrimmage, the versatility, be able to play slot, to be able to play which is essentially what that role is, to be able to play free safety, to be able to play strong safety. I think he's going to be out on the field a ton, you know, because you have Landon Collins and Bobby McCain. They have other options at that position. So I don't know if Cam Curl is going to be an every player kind of a guy. And that's one reason, the fact that you do have those other two guys is one reason to say, well, maybe he's not indispensable, Ben. You just said that the part of this exercise is what happens if somebody leaves, right? So you do have some other guys. I just think his versatility is so interesting that this is a guy that I just feel like they're really game planning for a ton. And again, he can play all over the place. So I'm going with Cam Curl at number six. Again, not saying he's a better player than Terry McLaurin. It just feels like if he were to be out of the lineup, you know, yes, you could play the three corners and go with Collins and McCain, probably feel reasonable about that. You know, Rivera said a guy like Kalik Hudson could maybe play that that big nickel position. So there may be some options. I just think Cam Curl is a pretty dynamic one. So I went with Cam Curl at number six. We've reached the top five. Number five, give me Cole Holcomb, right? Not a guy who I would imagine most people would think in this range, but here's my thing, right? Okay, so if you look at the linebacker situation, as we start the season, Jamin Davis doesn't look like he's quite ready to make a significant impact. He will play. He will presumably start when they go into 4-3 base as the Mike linebacker. When they go to a sub package, it looks like it'll be Holcomb and John Bostic holding down the fort for now. But, I think it's Holcomb to me that's the guy who's going to be out there every play. And he's the one who should be out there every play relative to those options where things stand right now. Washington has experimented going with five defensive linemen. I don't know if that's going to be often. It was less than it was. They used it more than any team in the league last year, but we're talking less than four snaps a game. There might be reason to increase that a bit, especially with Ioannidis back. But at the same time, you know, that's not something you can go with on every down. But they were experimenting some with going with, you know, I believe I saw it at times going with five defensive linemen, five in the secondary, and then the one linebacker. I think Holcomb is poised for, if I say a breakout year, I don't mean he's necessarily going to the Pro Bowl or anything. I just mean I think he's poised to step up his game to show that he's their best linebacker right now. And if he were to go out, I mean, that would mean a lot of John Bostic, presumably, or Jamin Davis when he may not be ready for heavy workload. So I think Cole Holcomb is a pretty intriguing player. Again, not the best, not the most valuable, but an indispensable. I think Cole Holcomb ranks pretty high on this list. Number four. This is the top four here get tough. Number four. I went with Antonio Gibson. Now, when we were discussing whether Barber should make the 53 or not, my basic argument against it was, look, obviously, if you have room, fine. But like, if Gibson were to go down, it's not like you can just plug Barber in. He has not looked to be a viable runner in any real way. So therefore, that's one reason I didn't have him on this list. Now we've seen, or on the roster. Now we've seen J.D. McKissic be a valued asset to this team last year as a pass catcher primarily, but also as a runner. He's just not built for every down work. And those early downs, you know, sometimes you want a more, you know, sort of subtle, just, you know, run between the tackles kind of guy. That's not him. That might be Jared Patterson, but I doubt it, right? He's such a small guy, 5'7", supposedly. So, you know, if McKissic and Patterson had to sort of take over, you know, obviously it's going to be a lot, seemingly a lot more outside runs and trying to maybe set up the run via the pass to create some lanes, some draws, some screens, what have you. But neither of those guys would give offensive coordinator Scott Turner that necessary, sort of early down run between the tackles kind of a guy. Obviously, on top of that, Gibson's a heck of a player, dynamic talent. He is poised for a huge year, I think, assuming that injury doesn't flare up. So I went with Antonio Gibson at number four. Number three, Logan Thomas. This Scott Turner offense, the history of it says the tight end is involved, heavily involved. Last year, Logan Thomas was involved big time, obviously, had a career year, got a new contract out of it accordingly. Boy, if he were to go down, I mean, let's not even really think about this because I don't want to put anything out in the air, but I guess I am. No, I'm not really. I'm just talking. I'm not doing anything. I mean, what are we talking about here? The tight ends behind Logan Thomas. You got a fourth-round rookie in John Bates. You've got a journeyman veteran type in Ricky Seals-Jones, and you have the incredibly raw and inexperienced Samus Reyes, who will be playing his first NFL regular season game, if he's assuming he plays, Sunday against the Chargers, and it will be the third game of his entire life, having played two preseason games. So really can't expect anything out of him for this year. That's a long-term play. If Logan Thomas goes out, I'm not saying you just completely eliminate tight end from the equation, but you kind of eliminate tight end from the equation in any real way. And obviously you don't want to do that just from a game planning perspective. They like featuring the tight end. Taking him out as much as anybody else would really, to me, reshape how Scott Turner would have to call plays. So I think Logan Thomas, not only is he coming off a really good year, but just the depth behind him, I think you have to, I go with him at number three. Number two, this is a debate, but I this might be really dumb. Feel free to yell at me through your, as you're listening to this, you know, scream into the void here if you want, or, you know, tweet at me, email me, whatever you got. I went with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Now, typically, you would think that the quarterback is always the most valuable position in North American professional team sports, and it's not like there's some, you know, obvious, you know, go-to, must-start quarterback, or even one with significant upside on the roster behind Fitzpatrick. However, obviously we've seen what Taylor Heinicke could do last year in that spot start in the playoffs against Tampa Bay. Kyle Allen has started a bunch of games in his career under Ron Rivera. And, you know, again, is a difference between saying, wow, this guy's your starting quarterback, you know, how many wins can he get, versus, hey, this guy's going to have to play quarterback, how many, you know, what can he do for you? I think both of these guys have shown the ability to do something. If Fitzpatrick misses, you know, 1, 2, 3 games, maybe Washington get by, misses the, you know, a chunk of the season or more, well then, you know, that could be a problem. That's why he's ranked pretty high up on this list. But, you know, and look, I guess the other thing with Fitzpatrick is he's an upgrade over what they had last year, and he's a better quarterback than these two guys. But because of his history with the ups and downs, you know, of his journey, then, you know, it's sometimes the downside is not going to be necessarily that dramatically worse than what you might get out of these other guys. The upside may be significantly higher, but maybe the downside isn't. So that's why I went with Ryan Fitzpatrick at number two, as opposed to the top spot, which normally you would think where quarterbacks would be. So who's in the top spot? Kind of cheated a little bit. I went with a tie. I went with Chase Young and Montez Sweat. I'm not separating these two because it's basically for the same reason. And that reason is, we have no idea what would happen if either of these guys left the field in terms of depth. I mean, last year, Ryan Kerrigan filling in for these guys when Chase Young got hurt in that Cleveland game and then missed the subsequent game. You know, it's not like, again, Ryan Kerrigan is on the downside of his career and all that, but at least he's an experienced player who can occasionally, you know, take down the quarterback. And at least from a mental perspective, he's kind of going to know what's going on. As we know, here's Washington's depth right now behind Young and Sweat. They have James Smith-Williams, a seventh-round pick from last year. Casey Tuhill, a guy they picked off waivers last year, who missed all of preseason with a toe injury. And Shaka Toney, a seventh-round pick this year. If Chase Young or Montez Sweat were to miss time, I would imagine that somehow they incorporate Matt Ioannidis into the starting lineup, but or at least use him more. But at the same time, you would lose the edge rush perspective. It probably is stupid to say it's not Fitzpatrick over these guys, but when you factor in that the defense is supposed to be the strength of this team this year, particularly on that defensive line, that these two guys are the ones who are going to be getting after the quarterback for the most part. I mean, we'll see some sacks from Ioannidis and maybe Allen, maybe Settle as well, but I think it's going to be Sweat and Young who are going to be leading that charge. They've talked about setting records, a team record for sacks. Mazel tov. If one of them misses time, I just don't know what they're doing at that spot that where you can feel, okay, this is going to work. It doesn't mean it couldn't happen, right? I mean, we see this happen all the time. where nobody's come in and all of a sudden they become somebody's. That could absolutely happen. Maybe Smith-Williams is the bomb. Maybe Shaka Toney starts just shocking everybody with his play. All that's possible. But right now, the drop from Chase Young and Montez Sweat to everybody else that they could possibly use as a defensive end pass rusher is pretty severe. For what it's worth, I could have gone Young and Sweat on different lines. Again, I decided to cheat and put them on the same line. If you made me pick one of them, well, you can't. This is my podcast, so I'm not going to. Tough. Good try, though. Nice one. I think they're both going to be really good years. We're going to do a season preview over on The Athletic this week, and maybe we'll get into some of that Chase Young versus Montez Sweat aspect. Not that they're going against each other, but just in terms of, you know, who has the better year. If we get to that, I'll maybe share some thoughts there, or we can talk about it later in the week. So anyway, so that's my most indispensable list. Again, in reverse order, number 10, Brandon Scherff, then Daron Payne, William Jackson, Terry McLaurin, Cam Curl, Cole Holcomb, Antonio Gibson, Logan Thomas, Ryan Fitzpatrick, with Chase Young and Montez Sweat number one. Just for a couple names not listed, I could have gone Leno, as I mentioned, but look, I mean, you know, Cornelius Lucas did a decent job last year. They obviously decided they needed to go out and get another left tackle anyway and draft a right tackle in Cosme, but nonetheless, Lucas was fine, and, you know, they do have Sadiq Charles as well. Didn't go with Curtis Samuel. You know what? It's just I haven't seen him. So, you know, but also at the same time, while he's very unique with his versatility and his playmaking, Washington does have other guys at that spot. I even debated Tress Way, not going to lie. It's, you know, obviously the punter is not typically a guy that you're going to want to pick for something like this, but we know how important he's been for this team over the last few seasons. And if this team is going to be sort of a defense first group, which isn't to say the offense is just going to be, you know, sort of lame, that, you know, having the punter in Tress Way to shift the field position will be huge. It's huge in any capacity, but I think it'll be particularly huge if it's the defense leading the way and the offense, you know, sort of trying to help out as best it can. Tress Way putting the ball, you know, putting the opposition in long field situations, it will go a long way towards this team having success. So he would somebody that I would consider. You know, there could be some others, but that's my group. So let me know what you think. Hit me up on Twitter at Ben Standig. Send me an email, bstandig@theathletic.com. Put up a smoke signal. Write comments on the iTunes section. Whatever you got, let me know your top 10 list of the most indispensable players on the Washington football team. All right. So that's it for that. You know, again, more to come this week talking about the Washington football team. You know, there's a big game this week. There's things to discuss, and I'm interested to hear what you guys think about this team, this season. There's a lot to consider, and we'll do that for sure later this week on the Standard Room Only podcast. For now, though, we're going to shift focus a little bit towards the Wizards. We'll talk about what to make of their offseason, the coaching change, the roster. Aaron Holiday is part of the new additions. Where do they fit into the East? My guy, J. Michael, formerly the Wizards and Indiana Pacers beat writer, now sports editor at the Orlando Sentinel. We talked a couple weeks ago about the Wizards, and it's a fun conversation. Always an interesting time with the live wire, J. Michael. We'll get to it right now here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. Going to pivot over to the Washington Wizards because they have pivoted off of their roster from last year, made a wholesale changes. Russell Westbrook gone, 8,000 other people are in. And the question is, on some level, does any of it really matter? We're going to get the insight here. I'll babble a bit, but also here, none other than the bad boy of the NBA. I don't mean Dennis Rodman. I mean, Mr. J. Michael from the Indianapolis Star. What's happening? How are you coping here? You did not go to Vegas. Did Vegas not let you in, or you decided it wasn't for you this time?
I decided it wasn't for me. I didn't want to. I thought about going just because I really wanted to get out of the house and go somewhere, but I just still wasn't comfortable with traveling just yet. So I chickened out, and there'll always be next year.
There will always be next year. I mean, this is the first year I haven't gone I mean, basically, since John Wall entered the league, I'd gone almost every year in some capacity. Obviously, not last year because it didn't exist. But yeah, I'm kind of bummed. On the other hand, yeah, you see on TV, it's not exactly the whole fun of the Vegas is the social component. I don't mean the Vegas part, but just like walking around the UNLV setup there, and it's not clearly is going to be as interesting because of the setup because of the situation we're all in. So, oh well. It is what it is. Plus, I got training camp with the football team, so I couldn't have gone anyway. But the Wizards are there, and I don't really want to talk about their summer league team because other than the first round pick, Corey Kispert, there's nobody. We don't care. There's nobody interesting there. but the roster is all kinds of interesting. And you know one of the new guys in Aaron Holiday. You cover him from the Pacers. So we want to get your take on that. But you obviously covered this team for a long time. You covered Eastern Conference team that was battling the Wizards last year. And you know, you're aware of all the things happening. So I want to start with this. It's not like I don't believe I'm a hater. I believe I'm a realist. And if there's praise to be warranted, we'll get it. And if there's not, then we go that way too. In this case, I think there's praise to be warranted for Tommy Shepard. And I want to get your view. And I just lay it out like this. 18 months ago, whenever they still had John Wall, the worst contract in the NBA, arguably. Coming off the Achilles, he's making gobs of money. There's almost nothing they can do other than what they did. Literally was what they did. Trade him to Houston with a first-round pick to take Russell Westbrook, who also had a problematic contract, but he wasn't dealing with the injuries. And it couldn't have worked out much better, I don't think, for the Wizards. They get the playoff year with Westbrook, and then they, from that, because Westbrook is so important, he gets his rehab, his value gets rehabbed. They switch him. They also 1 year less on his contract. They trade him effectively with some second round picks for Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, three guys that could play in a rotation for even a title team. They get the 22nd pick, which they then traded to your Pacers for Aaron Holiday and the 31st pick that they used on this flyer kid, Isaiah Todd. And then because there was still so much money left over in the deal, they were able to slide in the Spencer Dinwiddie contract into this and make it all one big deal. That is a pretty good haul considering a year prior you had John Wall and you literally could do nothing with him. We'll get to what it means for the bigger picture, but in terms of Tommy Shepard, a guy you dealt with, what do you make of that assessment that actually on these moves, he actually did a pretty good job.
You know, when the job was initially open and they were doing all the searching, you can go to my Twitter feed. I said, give Tommy Shepard the job multiple times. And so many people get like, well, he worked under Ernie, therefore it's his fault. So, you know, using that kind of simplistic, simpleton sort of logic, which, you know, goes to show you that, you know, just because somebody works under someone who you thought wasn't really good at their job, doesn't necessarily reflect on them. Well, you know, because the person in charge is the person in charge. You know, you can't be, you know, saddled with somebody else's mistakes. And I thought Tommy, based off my experience with him for years, is a pretty straight shooter. He's one of those guys, as you saw with the John Wall trade, he's not emotionally attached to these things like, man, we can't trade John because of what he means to the city, which you hear a lot of fans making that sort of argument. And when you're doing that job, you can't that can't matter. I mean, that doesn't matter when Pat Riley let Dwayne Wade walk, right? There are times where you just have to make decisions like that. That's not going to be popular with your fan base, but it has to happen because you're in the business of you're not emotionally attached that way. Even though you know, and if you are, you have to be able to separate yourself from it and make the best decision for the team. And you know, Tommy did. You know, Tommy was playing, I believe, multiple steps ahead when he acquired Westbrook because even though Westbrook's season didn't start out well with Washington, he didn't look good at all. He got healthy. He started playing better. You know, it kind of reminded me of, and this was a much lesser degree, but similar to when the Pacers had Victor Oladipo, I reported that they're going to get rid of him as soon as they possibly can, but they can't get rid of him because there's really no market for a guy coming off the injury that he had. You know, and I reported that he was asking other teams, can I play with y'all? People thought it was absurd. And what happens in January of this season? They trade him. Why? Because people got a chance to see, okay, he's able to play now. He has some value. And, there was a trade that needed to be made, and that they saw that he was at least serviceable, at least during that time, they were able to move him in a deal and get Caris LeVert for him in return. Well, Westbrook didn't start out the season well against Washington. There's no way Tommy could have moved him in season at that point, even if he wanted to. But then you see the product of, you know, what happens when he finally starts playing well. And I'm pretty sure, I'm almost positive he knew that Westbrook and the Lakers were a union that's bound to happen. So you make that move knowing that you're going to end up making another move anyway, where you're going to really get what you want. And that's what he's turned out to do and flip it into so many various assets. But these kinds of things take time. And I think that's what the whole – the having patience. And the one thing that you have to have in that role versus what a person sitting in his chair at home watching a game doesn't have is time to see 18, 24 months down the line. Whereas, you know, fans and sometimes even media, they want instant results. And it doesn't necessarily work that way most of the time. So I think Tommy's done a really good job. And people kind of forget, too, he inherited a situation that was the worst in the league, salary cap wise, the talent wise, the all the other variables that go into building the team. He inherited a whole load of crap. And to expect him to have fixed all of that within 6 months, which some people did, is absurd. And, you know, sit back, shut your mouth, let it all kind of roll pan out, then make an assessment. It's no different than a draft pick, Ben. Like sometimes a draft pick, well, when we say, oh, this team won the draft, well, you don't really know if they won the draft, not this year, even though that could be an indicator. But you really don't know how the draft really pans out after you look back at it after 3 or 4 years. And I think it's the same thing when it comes to this with Tommy Shepard. Give it that 12 to 24 months, probably closer to 24 months, given what he was dealing with, and then make a call. And I think it's pretty clear, even if this doesn't work out, best case scenario, he's giving him a chance and putting him a chance in a position to be successful and then build on that in the future. And you know, what more can you ask for when you look at what they were?
Right. I would say that, like, look, it would be easy for any of us to sit to point after the fact they shouldn't have done this or they should have done that because of the results. And obviously it's great to have that sort of fortune teller vision, but none of us do. The best you can do is make logical, reasonable moves that put yourself in the position that, you know, if things go right, this is the direction we want to go in. And that was something that they weren't doing before enough. It wasn't all, you know, it wasn't nearly as bad as everybody always made it out to be with the Ernie Grunfeld era. You couldn't have had that John Wall, Bradley Beal resurgence if, you know, without Ernie Grunfeld doing something right. But on the other hand, it did always feel like they were leaving too much on the table. There was too much short-term thinking. And it does feel like, to me, when I look at the moves he's made, for the most part, Tommy Shepard, they're heading in the right direction of a way you want to go. It's incremental moves forward. Like, to an example, like right now, you know, part of the issue with the Westbrook and Wall contracts was just that they were so massive. You couldn't just like easily flip them for other things. If you wanted to. And like, whereas now this roster has so many movable contracts that the Wizards are potentially one of those teams where we see it every year. There's some veteran that comes up that wants out of their situation, or, you know, before the season or during the season. And the Wizards now all of a sudden have stuff to trade. You can take 2-3 guys on this roster plus a pick and actually move them. Again, I'm not saying they have some great roster. I'm just saying like they have movable pieces that you could potentially do something with that they didn't have before. And like I said, that the haul that they got back for Westbrook in totality is pretty good, even if Westbrook is by far the best player in that lot. And so, yeah. And also to your other point, just, you know, it's so simplistic thinking to just say, well, Tommy Shepard was attached to Grunfeld, therefore it's insane. I mean, I thought it was insane that they took 3 months to look for a coach, for a GM, and then just hire the guy down the hall. That to me seemed pretty insane, but okay. That aside, he's got the job. He's done a good job with it. And now also we'll see, right? Scott Brooks was here, like even though he was part of the group that hired Scott Brooks was the coach making $7 million a year. I don't know how much influence Tommy Shepard could have on Scott Brooks, even if he wanted to. Now he's hired a new coach, so presumably he can have more influence on Wes Unseld Jr., and we'll see how that goes as well. Now, all that said, here comes the pivot. Okay. You mentioned the idea of like even Pat Riley traded Dwayne Wade. But I would assume that Pat Riley actually wanted to do that, that there wasn't necessarily pressure from ownership to do otherwise, even though Dwayne Wade's an icon there and maybe ownership could have said, eh, we don't want to do that. But okay, Pat Riley's Pat Riley, right? Tommy Shepard doesn't have that status. I'm convinced that in general, that Ted Leonsis puts his thumbs on the scale as an owner has the right to do when it comes to a lot of these choices. And to me, I've said this before, if you were going to, I didn't think you could trade Westbrook to the way they did or that taking on bad money or having to give up more picks. They did that and got guys back. The second you did that, you should have traded Bradley Beal, because where is this team going now? After I just praised all the stuff they got, where is this team? You cover a team in the East who last year dealt with a bunch of injuries and didn't, you know, they were in the play-in game, but didn't make the top eight the way the Wizards were able to do. I think most people would say the Pacers are going to be better than the Wizards this year when you bring back all their players. That's not counting all the other teams were already ahead of the Wizards, not counting the Bulls have gotten better, it appears. You know, the Bucks, the Nets, maybe the Sixers, depending on what happened to Ben Simmons, are way ahead of the Wizards. The Miami Heat are probably better. The Atlanta Hawks made the conference finals. Like, all that said, I don't know where the Wizards are. This feels like it's the classic. They just want to make the playoffs for the playoff money's sake. And to me, they should have traded Bradley Beal, who I said keep before when you had Westbrook and Wall. I would have traded him and started over, because you don't want to be in the middle. And they are as definitively in the middle as you could possibly be, unless some rookie, you know, one of these young guys really shoots way up. Where are you on that aspect? Even if we're praising Tommy Shepard, and I'm not saying this was his call, I don't know, but the idea of that they kept Beal, where I think they probably should have gotten rid of him.
Yeah, and that's a good point about, like, when I mentioned Pat Riley. Pat Riley runs that show in Miami. Mickey Arison, the owner, doesn't run the show. Pat Riley, I know for a fact, has told Arison, I got this. So when moves are made, he's kicked Arison's family out of the players' lounge. Like, that's how much sway Pat Riley has in Miami. So yeah, there's no doubt Ted has his thumb on the scale on some of these things. And you know, if Ted says, no, I'm not going to do it, then, you know, he's going to override anything that management wants to do. But I think here's what you do would be, regardless of what you end up doing, if you are going to trade him, trade high. Now, I mean, that sounds like, well, duh. Well, what I mean by that is don't wait until he's 32 years old and then decide, you should try to move him. Or he gets a season in an injury, and then you're thinking that you need to move him. You really need to move him now, because then it's too late. How many teams have you seen hold on to a player a year too long, and then it's, you know, he's kind of gone over that cliff, and you'll never see those days again, and those offers will never be that great.
By the way, a lot of times when that happens, the team has some realistic chance of contending for the thing, for the conference title. God bless the Wizards. Bradley Beal's a heck of a player. I like some of the other guys. They're not contending in the East. They don't really have a chance to contend in the East. Even if Rui Hachimura has some big leap, they're not contending in the East. So that's what I'm saying. Like, what's the upside? You're going to wait until, by the way, he still hasn't signed his extension. Now, there's a sense, I guess, that he will, but that hasn't happened yet either. So he could, in theory, walk sooner than later or force a trade out. That's another big, it's not like he has a 5-year contract he's sitting on. But anyway,
Here's the other thing I do understand, though, from a management and ownership perspective. If you trade Beal and you don't get another All-NBA caliber player back, let's face it. When it comes to teams like, you know, the Wizards and the Pacers, and, you know, I know people say, "Oh, how dare could you compare the Wizards to the Pacers?" Washington's a much bigger market, but it's not viewed the way you would think it should be, like a New York or an LA, right? And Washington isn't. Yeah, I think that's the other thing that people kind of confuse. They look at the numbers of DC and all the fit, like, but it's still not viewed around players with the league like this glamour market, that which it should be, right? And that's you got to put that on ownership. That's not on the front office. To me, that's on ownership. And so if you look at it that way, you understand, like, you can't lose an all-NBA guy and not get an all-NBA guy back, or a guy who has all-NBA potential. And that comes down to putting asses in seats, because, 100%. You can have a bunch of good players, but if you don't have that star, the guy who, the guy who the average person who's a casual fan who might plunk down $750 seats for him and his four family members, so that's a whole lot of money, to go see a Wizards game. If that person who's a casual fan who has money is going to come to a game, he's probably one of going to see Bradley Beal. And if you take out Bradley Beal and you just get a bunch of other guys who are mid-level playing guys, then that guy might probably won't go there and pluck down that kind of money. And so that's a concern for owners in all markets that aren't considered, you know, New York and LA and sure. whatever. There are few markets like, you know, like Oklahoma City where, you know, it's so boring there, they'll pay to see anything. So it's so you can get away with trading away all your stars. You're still going to have a bunch of people show up there because there's nothing else to do.
That's not the case. And that's the point, right? Like it's I totally get that. And that was one of my arguments for keeping Beal all this time was like trading Bradley Beal. How are you getting back this guy who, again, 28, an ascending talent. He just made all NBA, you know. You never know about anybody for sure, but seems like a pretty good role model type guy. He's active in the community. There's lots of reasons. And he's homegrown. He wants to be here. All these reasons are reasons to keep him. And I'm not arguing against any of that. However, the question is, what's the goal here? If the goal is win a championship, then keeping Bradley Beal doesn't seem to work to me in that context, because they're not there. Bradley Beal is not a guy who's at the top of the food chain. So J. Michael dropped off for a second. I just kept rambling on about this situation, and now he's talking to me on Zoom with his phone sideways. So this is fun. Oh, there we go. So anyway, I was just saying that I totally agree. Like in terms of the asses and seats, keeping Beal makes sense. He's a homegrown product. He's ascending town, all that. But if the goal is to win a title, realistically, that's not Bradley Beal as the first player with the other things they have, not going to get it done. I will say that, like, unlike last year where you kind of could see the ceiling because you knew Westbrook's situation, I don't know what the ceiling is with this team exactly. Now, you have a guy like Kyle Kuzma coming from the Lakers, had a lot of hype when he entered the league, kind of taper off a bit the last couple of years, maybe getting away from a LeBron situation where LeBron is so dominant that maybe he refines something that spark he had earlier in his career. Maybe the Rui Hachimura or Denny Avdia go up another level. And again, they do have assets now to maybe make a 3 or 4 for 1 trade that gets them that guy that pushes them over to, I don't know. But I'm just saying realistically, they were finally in a position after all this time of these rough contracts you mentioned. I mean, look, they had the Jan Mihimi contract. That finally fell off. You had John Wall. They had a lot of bad deals. They all fell off, but now you have Beal. It could have started over if the goal was to win a title. They didn't. I'm not putting that on necessarily on Tommy Shepard, but this is an owner who said, quote, we will never tank a couple of years ago. And I think that he was pretty honest there. He wasn't saying that from a competitive standpoint. He was saying that for what you just said. There's an ass in seats component to this. We have not proven in this market that we can start over, even if that's the best thing to do, and get people to show up. And now you're doing it after a pandemic. I understand from a business perspective why they don't make that trade. Let me pivot to Aaron Holiday. You've covered him. I liked him a lot coming out of the draft. The Wizards traded the 22nd pick in the draft they acquired from the Lakers for Holiday and the 31st pick. He hasn't done, I guess, that much living up. He was a first round pick in 2018, the same year as Troy Brown. I don't think he's lived up to the hype, but I kind of like him from afar, but you've actually covered him. What are the Wizards getting? And did you like that trade from the Wizards perspective?
It's a good gamble. I've been saying for the last 2 years and just about every radio podcast interview I do regarding to the Pacers, when Aaron Holiday's name comes up, I've been saying I've talked to his, he's had a couple of agents who I have a good relationship with, and I've told them both before he was traded, he needs another destination. And I've said to people with the Pacers, he needs to play somewhere else. And the reason being is in Indiana, he always played out of position. His first year as a rookie, he played behind Darren Collison. And that was the year that Oladipo started to have issues with his knee. And I remember Oladipo missed like a month and a half of the season Holiday played out of nowhere, and he just lit it up. I'll never forget. He came in the game against Atlanta and, like, dropped, like, 16, 17 points, couldn't miss from three. Then against Utah, I remember him lighting him up in a game or two later. And it was like, wow, the Pacers have gotten the steal of the draft because he showed something. And then his minutes started to kind of get dialed back a little bit more when Oladipo came back. Then Oladipo tore his quad tendon in his knee, and he was done that January. And Holiday's time, though, got kind of sporadic, and it was surprising. And, you know, part of the reason is there was a clash between him and Darren Collison when it came to, you know, some people thought on that team, some veterans, that they needed to hold Aaron back because they thought he was a little bit too aggressive. He's a 6 foot, 6'1" point guard who has a shooting guard's mentality. I would say, for comparison, I would say his ceiling would be a Lou Williams, which isn't a bad player at all, who's much more committed to playing defense and physically stronger for a small. He's a little bulldog. Like the Pacers are really soft when it comes to rebounding, defensive rebounding. And, you know, you'll see tweets and videos from me where I was showing last year that Aaron Holiday was in there on switches, battling with 6'10", 7 foot guys, boxing them out to try to help his team get the rebound, while guys like Sabonis and Miles Turner were just standing there watching and not putting a body on anybody. And that's what I like about Aaron Holiday. He's tough. Look, he's the smallest guy among most teams that he's going to play on. He's obviously sharpened over the years, but he has a gunner's mentality in a sense that he can sometimes come in and he's looking for a shot a little too much. He's not a good finisher inside the arc, not a great finisher at the rim, even though he's a really good athlete. You know, his biggest thing, I think, is going to be finishing in traffic at the rim over guys. But, man, let me tell you, even if his shot's not falling defensively, there's no let up in how he plays. And I just thought, you know, he just needs to be somewhere else, because when he played with the Pacers with T.J. McConnell in there, who, you know, T.J. McConnell came the last two seasons, McConnell gets the duties as the one. Aaron Holiday usually plays in three-guard lineups as a three. So that's why, if you go back to when they played against the Wizards late last season, you saw Aaron Holiday guarding Davis Bertans. He wasn't guarding anybody close to his size. He always got put against the guy at the wing. And so if you look at all the games last year where he was played in three-guard lineups, Brogdon, McConnell, Aaron Holiday, he was the guy always playing out of position. So that's why I always said, in order for him to maximize, I think he needs to be in a situation where he plays his natural position for a prolonged period of time, and maybe you can see exactly what he's got. But if he turns into something anywhere close to a Lou Williams, you know, even a little bit short of that, I still think that's a pretty good NBA career, and I think he has potential for that.
So he's going into his fourth season, right?
Yeah.
So he's going to be – his contract, I assume the fifth-year option, I assume, has not been picked up yet, because I guess it's the Wizards' call, and that'll happen right before the season starts, more or less. So if he was on the Pacers, would you say they should be picking up his fifth-year option? Should they be extending him? Like, where would you be at from that perspective?
This is year four he's going into, right? So this is the last year if he's guaranteed on his rookie deal. So, yeah, he would be – so he – I would say go into next season, I'd let him go in unrestricted and make him prove it, that he's worthy of a second contract of some significant value. It wouldn't, in the Pacers' perspective, I mean, they already had T.J. McConnell. It wouldn't have made sense for them to try to come to terms with Holiday on a longer deal and lock him up when he was the number three point guard in the rotation. It wouldn't have made sense for that.
So the Wizards, they moved down they didn't give up a first round pick per se. They moved down nine spots from 22 to 31 to do this. So I guess, do you think that was, they have Bradley Beal. They've now signed Dinwiddie. You kind of figure they kind of knew that Dinwiddie would, or something, they would get another point guard somehow before this. They have KCP as well. Do you think it was a worthy risk that, like, I guess in theory they could make, that he could be a restricted free agent after the year. He could be gone after 1 year and they will move down nine spots for that to happen. You think that was a worthy move then by the Wizards?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is, because to me, it's a low risk, high reward move. If you're the Wizards, if you believe that the quality of the players that you're going to get in the draft between 22 and 31 were the same, I have no problem if you move down two or three spots, or you move down seven, eight, or nine spots. If there's no drop off really in terms of the caliber of player, or if there's a guy in particular that you have targeted that you think you can get there, I got no problem with that. But in terms of Holiday, yeah, I think he's a risk worth taking, because I'm kind of in the middle on him. I've always been an Aaron Holiday truther, in the sense that I think if we see him put in another position, he has to, in order for him to maximize whatever his maximizing for him is, it has to be outside of Indiana, because it's just the way the team is constructed, the way they play, even under different coaches, McMillan and Bjorkgren, Aaron Holiday's kind of always the odd guy out. So I think he has potential to be an everyday rotation guy. And I think when the Wizards made that move, they didn't have any guards on the roster officially yet, right? Because they had all the moves they had made.
Right.
So you need a backup guard somewhere. Look, when it comes to these deals, like with Dinwiddie and the rest of these guys, all of this stuff was already kind of figured out before free agency even opened. So I don't think there was any mystery on who they thought their starting point guard was going to be. They already kind of had that targeted. Nobody goes into free agency with a blank slate and then tries to figure it out on the fly. If anybody believes that, I got oceanfront property to sell you in Kansas. This stuff has kind of been mapped out already. But no, I think Holiday's a good gamble. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I think it has potential. He has potential to do so. And he's on a team where, it's got some team players with experience, but yeah, I think he has a spot where his position isn't as crowded as it was in India.
Lastly, before I let you go, since you cover the league and see all these guys, the answer can be Holiday, could be Dinwiddie, could be any of the Lakers guys. Maybe it's Rui or Danny Avdia. I don't know. Who's the guy that, like, if we say Beal and Dinwiddie are like the top two, and there's going to be that, you need a third guy. And again, Dinwiddie's coming off an ACL, and I don't think he's ever been an all-star, but he's a good player. Who's the third guy? Who's going to emerge, if somebody's going to emerge, to be the guy? So if the Wizards want to have hope of, we really think we can compete in the East, whatever that means, who's your best bet for that guy? And if the answer is, keep digging, then that's the answer.
Kuzma? Yeah, gotta go with Kuz. By the way, I'm gonna pat myself on the back. When he came out in the draft,
there's a shock.
At my old job there, yeah, I'm patting myself on the back. At my old job there, I did a big thing on sleepers. Kuzma was one of my guys. Actually, two of those guys are on the Wizards right now, Montrezl Harrell and Kyle Kuzma. So I like to congratulate myself.
I pat myself on the back for Montrezl Harrell all the time. I saw him at a high school all-star game and immediately was like, oh my Lord, who's that guy? And been all in ever since. But keep going.
Are you still patting yourself on the back for Seth Curry, by the way?
Absolutely. Every time he has a good game, he was like the third best player on the Sixers this year.
Hell yeah.
I'll say you were hollering about Seth Curry. Jeez, man. Before he was even locked in on the league. So yeah. When you get these little victories like that, man, you gotta hold on to them.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I would say Kuz. I would expect it to be him. It's not KCP. I'm not quite sure enough on Rui to draw any kind of definitive conclusions. I will say this though about Dinwiddie, he's a good point guard. He can do some good things. I'm just curious what he looks like on the defensive end, which has kind of always been the knock against him, is, being an on-ball defender. But, I'm curious what he looks like on that side of the ball.
Well, no.
I've been a huge Daniel Gafford fan when he was coming out. I thought the year the Pacers took Goga Bitadze, I knew they were going to take a big guy like that. Gafford it's who I expected it to be, and it turned out to be Gogo Kitazza. So I've always been a Gafford fan. I think he really fits. Gafford's a perfect example of what shows you, like, you got to put a guy like him in the right situation and you can see him flourish, and you put him in the wrong situation, you kind of lukewarm on him. So I like Gafford, but yeah, Kuz would be my number three guy if all things go like best case scenario, I guess I'd say for those.
Got it. All right. Well, I mean, look, I think there is intrigue there with him because he did come into the league pretty hot and then it's kind of tapered off. And the question is to what, you know, was it just a lot on a bad team right off the bat, or was there, you know, something to it? And it'll be interesting to see how they use him. You still got Davis Bertans there getting $16 million a year, playing more or less the same position. And Bertans had all kinds of issues last year coming into camp out of shape because of whatever, the pandemic or whatever. I couldn't guard anybody. He wasn't, you know, he can still shoot, but you got to play at both ends. Kuzma's going to be giving him a better version of that. He made 36% of his threes. KCP made 41%. You got to get Denny Avdia minutes. You drafted Corey Kispert, who's a three. You know, as a rookie, maybe he doesn't play that much, or he's a wing at least. And how do you get all minutes? If you don't make any other trades, how do you get minutes for these guys? And I'll be curious to see if Bertans, where he fits in with a new coach, if he struggles on defense, you know, they now actually have enough. And this is the point with the praise for Tommy Shepard. In previous years, they would have to play some guys who just weren't giving you what you wanted because you didn't have too many other options. They have options now, Kuzma being one of them at the wing, and we will see. All right, I told you I wouldn't keep you for a marathon session, and I'm going to live up to that word at least. Anything that people need to know, you want to tell them where to bother you on Twitter or read you or anything along those lines?
You can find me on Twitter at this is Jay, just the letter, Jay Michael.
Fantastic.
Yeah, don't you know, I have you bothering me. I have you bothering me enough in standing. So we didn't mention Otto Porter. We didn't mention Otto Porter in this entire conversation. I'm impressed.
Sure. Look, comeback player of the year. Is it too early to just engrave his name on the trophy playing with Golden State?
Oh, goodness gracious. Otto, I heard Otto just sleeps on a bed of money, not a mattress, courtesy of the Washington Wizards.
It's like that meme from Breaking Bad where one of the henchmen is laying on top of all of Walter White's money. Yeah, 100. I think it's funny that Golden State went from Kelly Oubre to Otto Porter. I think that's pretty funny. And Otto Porter is a much better fit for them. He's got to stay healthy. It's been his issue. I think if he's healthy, I mean, he's a guy in the playoffs, people are going to be going, what the hell? Where's this been? Because I guarantee you this. If the opposing team tries to put the equivalent of Isaiah Thomas on him, Steve Kerr will get the ball to that guy as opposed to maybe what happened in another team.
Oh, boy. That is a low blow to, if you guys aren't paying attention, that's to Scott Brooks, right? $7 million a year coach for the Wizards at the time.
Am I wrong? I think they beat the Celtics if he exploits that matchup.
I like it.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
They're beating the Celtics. There's about a dozen things they could have done differently that even I think knew defensively and offensively that they could have done to have won that series against the Celtics. They made Isaiah Thomas a legend in Boston because of the way they played against the Celtics. That was, you know, no disrespect to Isaiah Thomas, but he wasn't that good. But the Wizards, they made him look that good. Or excuse me. Scott Brooks made him look
100%.
So yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. And to wrap up, now that Tommy Shepard now not only has remade the roster, but now he has his coaching hire, and I think that's going to be significant too. That means a lot when you come into a role and you take it over a team that's not your team, but you also have coaching staff that's not your staff, and now he has a staff that's his staff.
Absolutely. All right, man. Appreciate it. Have fun in the land that you inhabit, which is not Las Vegas. Smart call. Stay safe. We'll talk. See ya.
All right, dude. See ya.
All right. That is it for this episode of the Standard Room Only podcast. Thanks to Jay Michael for his time. Thanks to you guys for listening and checking out the podcast. Always appreciate it. For real. And back more this week. I didn't say it at the top because I'm really bad about promoting my stuff sometimes, but I'll have a new story up on The Athletic on Monday morning. I think it'll be up Monday. I don't know. I haven't talked to my editor yet. I think it'll be up Monday. It's sort of a putting a last look at to the front office with Ron Rivera, Marty Herney, Martin Mayhew, Rob Rogers, kind of everything that kind of went into this group. What do outside people, agents and others think of them, and you know how they helped reshape this team. So that will be up on The Athletic on Monday, I think, or at some point this week. But that's it for now. Appreciate the time. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.